saddest part of all of this is that whatever way you go, there are always going to be the what ifs. And that for me is the hardest, trying to hold a family together to say, it's okay. You don't need to blame yourself. This isn't about blame.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Hayley Manning.
And I'm Catherine Mousley. We just wanted to thank you for listening today. We created this podcast for you, so if you would like to contact us, you can do so via Instagram, which is Time to Talk TFMR, or you can email us at talktfmr@yahoo.com. Let us know your thoughts or what you might like to hear us talk about.
Today we're going to be joined by our guest Sally Kelly. She's a midwife specialising in bereavement care of women and families who have lost a baby, and she's a passionate advocate for women who are facing TFMR. She's a trained midwife since 2006, and she became a specialist bereavement midwife in 2014.
So I think, Hayley, it's come up in some conversations we've had previously that you had access to a bereavement midwife and I didn't. So I was maybe just wondering, how was your care different, or do you think it affected how you grieved afterwards or the process?
Yeah. I mean, I feel really grateful to have had a bereavement midwife, and actually Sally was my bereavement midwife. I didn't know that that was available to me until the hospital said to me, we have this person, would you like to speak to her? And I was trying to think about when I was first told about Sally, and I think it may have been when we found out about Luna, that she had a fetal abnormality, but not when we had decided to terminate, or we hadn't made that decision yet. And I think I actually said, I don't want to speak to her just yet. I think because I was going, well, in my head, I'm not in bereavement at this point. But when I did say, when we made our decision that yes, termination was where we were heading, I can remember coming into a meeting with, it was a consultant doctor, and Sally was there, and probably one of the midwives that do all your prenatal testing and everything, and us having this conversation. And I think from that moment on, I just sort of clung to Sally. She was my information point. I had no idea what was coming. And I remember walking around the hospital with her, going over to the labor ward. I had given birth there before with Benjamin. I'd actually had an emergency cesarean with him. So I was familiar with the hospital, with the maternity unit, but they gave me a little tour and showed me the bereavement suites. And I remember walking into one of the birthing rooms, and I think that there must have been another midwife with us. And they both asked me, you know, have you thought of names for your baby yet? And I'm sort of realizing now that what certainly Sally was doing was this sort of normalizing. She was sort of signaling that this is a birth, this is your baby. Even though that this was, yes, a termination, we knew that Luna was going to die, I was still going to be giving birth. And I think she was really just trying to help me make that connection, really. And then subsequently, all the way through, I mean, she came and visited me once a week after Luna had died. You know, she was visiting at my house. I don't know how I would have really coped without her. I remember sort of 3 or 4 months in and me saying to her, is it okay that I'm still using you? You know, surely there's other women and families that need you. Am I taking up too much of your time? And she went, it's okay, Hayley, not everybody wants me. And me sort of thinking, I think I said, how is that possible? But yeah, no, she definitely, I wouldn't be here now without her very steady and wise hands. Yeah, but so Catherine, how about you? Because I know that that wasn't really open to you, but tell us about that.
No, well, I obviously didn't know they existed. I didn't know to ask for one. I didn't know they were available. I think at the time, having just, you know, I think someone thrust this book in my hands, which is the burden of choice, and that was it. There was nothing else. And then we left, and it's only since coming into contact with yourself and other women who have had access to one that it makes me feel quite angry and also quite sad, because it feels like a different version of myself that was terrified and didn't know anything and was looking to others to guide me, and I wasn't really getting back what I was almost expecting. So I think it's always that bit of regret as well, like how much different could it have been if I'd had someone by my side like Sally?
Yeah.
Especially afterwards, as the grieving process starts to happen, as you start to go back into normal life, like just having someone to ask these questions, you know, is this normal? Like, yeah. Am I supposed to feel like this? And all the, obviously the burning question on everyone's lips is, how long is this going to last? And obviously no one knows, but you can talk to someone about that, which makes the process easier to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I'm struck by is that I had Sally advocating for me from the moment she came in the room, even though I didn't really realize that's what she was doing or there for necessarily, but she was advocating for me and making sure I had everything I needed and informing me of what was available to me. And you didn't have that. I mean, your experience is...
No, I still remember to this day, like getting a letter about my 20-week scan and just the floods of tears. I think, how does no one know that my baby's died? Like, why have I got this letter? And I think sometimes if I'd had access to a midwife, that even that would have been different.
Mm.
It's like something else that reinforces the trauma. Like, someone should have updated those notes.
Yeah.
So yes, they can have such a huge impact on women in ways we don't even realise at the time, or they will never know, or guess people listening as well, because there will be people in our positions that will have very contrasting experiences as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, let's bring Sally in. Welcome, Sally. It's really nice to have you with us. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's great to see you as well. I know our listeners can't see you, but we can see you on the screen. And the last time I saw you was just over a year ago at the hospital during the remembrance ceremony. And this year, sadly, we weren't able to do that. But yeah, I mean, just on that, I mean, Catherine and I have had very different experiences, as you've heard. I had you and Catherine didn't have
you.
Anyone. Yeah, I didn't have you. And I think it would be nice to hear from you what you feel your role is, what you're there to bring, what a bereavement midwife is there to do.
Okay. Well, I mean, from my perspective, I'm there to support someone in whatever decisions they come to, and to help them to access as much or as little as they want within the terms of the actual bereavement care. For some people, they want very minimal input, and there are quite a number who won't want me at all. It's kind of like, why would I want the bereavement midwife? You know, this is my baby didn't die. I'm going to be having a termination. It's for this reason, and I get that, but I also, surely that doesn't get a bereavement midwife. I think also that for a lot of people, it's a scary journey, and it seems to go along quite, you know, that there's quite a tidal wave of information that comes in and you're making a decision, and it all seems to be going like a train, and a bit like a train, you can hear the wheels getting faster and faster and faster. And yet that's not how it should be. It should be that you have time to sit back. It should be that you have time to think about what your choices are. And choice is such a rubbish word, because it doesn't feel like a choice. Yeah. And I think it's so hard. It's, you know, a rock and a hard place, really. So to be there and to hold someone's hand and just say, did you understand that? You know, what else would you like to know? Is there anything that doesn't make sense? What other options are there? All of these questions need to be looked at in the safety of a situation that isn't rushed. And I think that's crucial, because a lot of appointments are very much time limited. Whereas as the bereavement midwife, it's not that I have tons of time to myself, but what it does mean is that I can nominate where I spend my time. And so if I've got somebody who needs me to sit with them, then I will sit with them and we will work through things, and then they can come back to me if they want to. Nothing needs to be done right this minute. Very rarely. There are occasions when that is the case, but on the majority of cases with this particular type of pregnancy loss, you've got time.
That feels like a little bit of a hard pill to swallow for me, because I mean, a lot of the listeners will be familiar with my journey going forward after our loss, because I'm quite vocal about it. But we had none of what you've just said. There was no time. It was a bank holiday weekend. We were very much kind of rang off on the phone call on the Thursday, and by the Tuesday we were booked in for the termination. There was no one to ask about our questions during that bank holiday. It was right, okay, so we're going to book you in, we've got you a bed here, and this is what you're going to do. And it was just, I had no headspace whatsoever to think about this decision. And afterwards, because it's so rushed, you just, wow, did I make the right one? I can't do anything about it now. And I think then is the grieving and the mourning period of also having to make this choice that's not a choice, and the grieving of the baby, and also like what could have been different. And then it has such a knock-on effect the rest of your life, and you're still battling all these questions as you go on to have another child, as you know, go on to have a live birth, and you're comparing those two births constantly as well, with no one again to talk to. I mean, I guess I'm, there's many women that are in my position.
Sadly, I think there are, and it hurts me to hear that that was your experience, because not every hospital has a bereavement midwife, but it's certainly very much more the case now than it ever was. But not everybody will be offered a bereavement midwife. You know, we just happen to have at the hospital that I work at that women from 14 weeks onwards will deliver in our maternity labour ward if they're having a termination for fetal abnormality, or if they're going for a medical termination and such. But the difference is in quite a number of hospitals, they have their own gynae wards.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah. And once you're in a gynae ward, I'm not saying that gynae wards are bad or anything, but it's a different experience. Mm. I think that you're very much as a patient, you know, I mean, the staff there will do everything they can. But again, it's an area that could really benefit from having a bereavement input, and not every hospital will offer that. So it was by default that Hayley was able to access me because of our situation in not having a gynae ward. So
that look, you know, at the draw almost in some ways.
I mean, other hospitals, a lot of them won't, you wouldn't get into a labour ward unless you were over 20 weeks.
Yeah.
Because you'd be dealt with in a gynae ward.
This is what really kind of makes me a little bit angry, is it's not a standardized procedure across the whole of the NHS, because I think it can go on to affect so many other areas of your life that it should be. It should all be standardized care to then have some chance of preventing what could happen afterwards in a way.
I mean, I'm not sure that I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I don't like the word standardized, because I actually feel that it needs to be individualized.
Yeah, well, a bit of both, maybe, in a way.
Yeah. I feel that the option should be available for everybody to have access.
Yeah.
Aimed at their specific situation, because everybody has very, very different outlooks. And I think also the very terminology that I'm given, bereavement midwife, is kind of off-putting for people. And some people will not even enter that environment. They're just like, what do you mean a bereavement midwife? And yet from the minute you're told that there is something wrong with your baby that's bringing you to this moment, you have got a grieving going on.
Yeah.
You're grieving for the child that you really had hoped for. You're coming to terms with the fact that your child has a condition. You're then facing the information that says to you, well, you know, the chances for your child are really slim. Yeah. Now this is your decision. This is your choice.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like a choice.
No, it doesn't. It feels like the again, excuse my language, but the shittiest place that you could ever be in the shit. You know, there's just, it's all choices, all routes lead to a pretty unknown place. It's that unknown, that uncertainty, and they all kind of lead down that way. And I was just interested in what you were saying, Sally, there about your title, bereavement midwife. And I think I did have that kind of going, well, I don't think I need the bereavement midwife yet, because I'm not bereaved yet. And I don't know if I will be bereaved. I definitely was going through a grieving process, though. I think also, again, the sort of lucky draw of the hospital, your team of midwives there that do the prenatal testing, I leaned on them quite a lot for that support, and they were very willing to give it to me. you know, as far as, can I call you up if I have questions about things? I've been to see the consultant and had a scan. Can I call you up and talk to you about it? If I'm feeling a bit frightened or wobbly, can I call you and talk to you about it? When I came in to see them, you know, and I just wanted to hear Luna. I just wanted to just hear if she's, I wasn't having a scan, but can you put the Doppler on me so I can just hear her? And they went, yeah, yeah, that's fine. You know, so they were very available to me. But yes, I think your title kind of slightly, for me, I don't need her yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I can see how people might go, no, don't need to speak to her. I think I was also interested in that people may think, well, this is a termination. It's not a bereavement.
But I think that's a knee-jerk reaction, like you almost have, because it's a bit of denial. I don't know, maybe. But going back to when Sally said about, you know, you're dealing with the diagnosis and the prognosis of your child as well, but you're also like grieving for the memories. Mm. Straight away, once you know you're pregnant, you almost begin to think about, you know, first days at school and first Christmases and what are they going to look like, and like what am I going to buy for them and things like that. It's, you know, straight away you're just grieving for all those memories as well. And
I wondered if it also was maybe linked to, well, I'm terminating. Am I entitled to grieve?
Yeah.
Am I entitled to be bereaved? You know, should I have support? Because I've made this choice, as we've just been talking about. I've made this decision.
Is that what you kind of help with, Sally?
Yeah, it's such a difficult place to be. You know, I find a lot of parents who are in this situation carry a lot of guilt with them because, of course, unfortunately, the only person who can make the decision is the parents.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the mother, which really sounds terrible. Because in a lot of cases, the father of the child or the partner may not, they're not necessarily able to comprehend exactly what all of that means. I'm not saying that they're, you know, being stupid about it, but if you're not carrying the child, then there is a difference in the connection between a baby and its mother and a baby and it and the other parent.
Yeah, there is.
We were talking about that recently as well, weren't we?
And I think that, so quite often people will say things like, well, you know, whatever you decide, I'll stand by you. So I think a lot of women then feel that the burden on them is immense. I've made this choice. Have I made a choice? I've made a choice. That's what I'm being told. I've made a choice. So therefore, I shouldn't, you know, I shouldn't be grieving. But as you say, from the minute a woman conceives a pregnancy, in most cases, she's already thinking about what sex the baby is, which school they're going to go to, you know, what colour hair, what colour eyes.
Yeah.
That's a normal part of being a parent. And then all of a sudden, someone's gone to you, well, actually, that's not going to be your story.
Yeah.
And it's also the grief of like losing the scenario of a healthy baby as well. That can be quite a big thing. You've got this image in your head of a real healthy living baby. You're bouncing on your lap and all of a sudden that's just gone and it's taken away from you.
It's that levels of uncertainty again, isn't it? Whatever path you may decide, both have uncertainty. You know, we were researching and finding out about the disorder and what sort of life she may lead and what it would mean for all of us. And we were very much not rushed. So again, contrasting to Catherine's story, as soon as I said, we want to take our time with this, everybody went, yep, that's fine. Take your time with this. There was no pressure from anyone. And I mean, we found out at our 12-week scan that she was showing up with difficulties. And so we had a long window legally, you know, before there was any sort of pressure from that way.
But I think also what you've said there, Hayley, was really important. I think the fact is there is a time continuum at some point, depending when you get your diagnosis, can make the difference between whether you're making or having a bit more time to make a decision or whether that decision is really going to be taken out of your hands. Because for some people, the medical condition might not be with the child, it might be with the mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a risk to her life. And so therefore, you know, it could be an emergency situation. They literally are not going to get, other than to sign the consent form, we're going to deliver your baby.
Mm.
And because your baby is under a certain amount, it can't survive. whatever method is chosen, the baby won't make it through it. Mm. And that can be very, very difficult, because that's almost like an instantaneous. So you can have somebody who comes in who's catastrophically bleeding.
Mm.
Yeah. And to save that mother's life, you may have to deliver her baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you, can you be present with the mother if you're in contact with her before this decision has happened, or like at the time of the birth, if they need you there, or is that not within your remit?
No, it can be within my remit. I tend purely from the point of view that I think that it's important that all midwives can work with families whose babies die. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it goes hand in hand with everything that a midwife does. It's not all about, you know, live babies at the end of the day. And so I tend not to be involved in the births, with the exception normally of those ladies who have continued in the knowledge that they have a child with a life-limiting condition. And those ladies I tend to follow along, because actually they also struggle, very much like Hayley said about listening in. When we know a child has got a life-limiting condition, sometimes people really aren't quite sure, what do I offer to listen in? Do I do this? And actually what they want is to just embrace that pregnancy while they have it.
Yeah.
While they have that child inside them, and to make sure that we have a plan in place for all the eventualities that can happen. So the baby might die minutes after being born, it might die hours after being born, it might die days. In some cases they can live for quite some time. Have we got things in place, like have we got a hospice organised? Do they want to take their baby home? How do we do all of this? Those are the sort of things that have to be thought about. And so for these women, it can be really difficult, because they quite often come in almost weekly to have scans. And it's heartbreaking to know that your child's got a condition that it won't survive, but I'm also going to have to come in every week, 2 weeks, and have a scan to tell me that my child's got a condition that it won't survive, that I already know about. I mean, I appreciate that they're doing it because things can change. You know, some of the conditions can cause complications within themselves. And so there are very valid reasons why they do that. But I can remember one mother who said to me, oh, Sally, I can't believe it. You know, I've prayed and prayed, but the baby's no better today.
Mm. That hope that she was continuing with was essentially distinguished.
But she, well, it never was with her. She was amazing, but she had to have that hope.
Mm.
They all have to have that hope. When my baby's born, she said to me, you'll see, they've got it wrong.
Mm. I can remember contending with those feelings, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, really feeling like, you know, Luna's going to be doctors don't know everything. Miracles do happen. I'm not a particularly religious person in that sense, but this feeling that, you know, sometimes doctors get it wrong. I mean, I knew that they were right about her condition, but I was thinking, well, maybe they'll be it wrong about how serious it is. That because Turner syndrome is a spectrum disorder, that she will be on the more, you know, highly functioning side of that spectrum. And so wanted to hang on until, we just needed to hang on until we were ready, and that we knew we had a better picture of what her life may look like outside the womb, if there was a possibility of that.
It's also like a disbelief almost, because I remember after Bud was born and he was like utterly perfect to me, and I couldn't believe just how much he looked, is that like a baby, and his fingernails. And I remember saying to Chris, there's nothing wrong with him, there's absolutely nothing wrong, they've got it all wrong. And I had to send him into one of the midwives to ask, you know, this is definitely, he hasn't got Down syndrome, there's nothing wrong with him. But there was no distinguishing features at all, you know. And she, I can remember when she came in to talk to us, and it's very sympathetic, probably felt slightly patronizing, but she was like, you know, it won't show this early.
Yeah.
And I was like, we've definitely got it wrong, like. And then it set into the, what the hell have I done?
Yeah.
And that was quite distressing to deal with as well. She was utterly convinced that you've made the wrong decision.
And I think that a lot of parents struggle with the different diagnoses, because as you say, there, some of them have got spectrums that are involved, and so therefore, you know, if I'm making this decision, what happens if that wasn't the case for my child? But what if my child was on the very, very minimal amount of that spectrum? And of course, we can't tell you that. It's not a measurable thing. And so people will then maybe meet up after they've had their own baby, you know, having opted for the termination, and then they meet up with somebody or find out about a family who had a child with a similar condition.
Mm.
That child is okay, as okay within that condition as it can be, living a relatively reasonable life. And there are all sorts of different conditions. Some of them are just not able to survive for any length of time.
Yeah.
But for those parents, quite often just having a little bit of time with them is really important.
Mm.
And for other people, they say, but I don't want to have to go through all of that only to watch my baby die in my arms.
Yeah.
So it's a real kind of like, it's so complex. And of course, there's a lot of words banded around babies suffering.
Mm.
But how do we quantify that? You know, we don't know. And so we need to just think about what's best for each parent. I can't make a decision for somebody.
Mm.
All I can do is support the decision that they make in the best way that I can. And also to look at all of the different possibilities around that decision, because it's not for me to say, well, I wouldn't have done that.
Mm.
What's really important there is for me to be sitting and saying, what do you need to know?
Yeah.
How can I help you?
I think it's, we're sort of speaking to people's individual situations and their ability to manage unknowns.
Mm.
Like you said, you know, some families, some women will go, well, I will have them here for as long as I can possibly have them here. That's what I need.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's others that say, you know what, I'm ready at this point, that it's okay now to let this baby go now and have a termination at that point. And all the other options in between are all okay.
Mm-hmm.
But these are all possibilities that all have a place. And there is no one size fits all here. This is very much about the individual. Because you know what, if I was to get pregnant again and we were to be told that the baby had an abnormality, I can't say that I would definitely have another termination. I can't say that because it's a different pregnancy. It's a different baby. I am a different person than I was 4 years ago. So, you know, just because I've done it before doesn't mean I'll definitely do it again, or even at the same point, or, you know, it would be a completely different situation to work from.
Mm.
And I think it's really important for people to know that, that just because one person's done it one way, you've done it another way, it's all okay. It's all okay.
It is, which is why groups together need to be very supportive of each other.
Yeah.
Because until you have walked in a person's shoes,
mm.
you have no idea what they're going through. You don't know what their life experiences are. You have no idea. And even if you have a similar story, it is not the same story.
Yeah.
And so we should not be judging anybody. And nobody's delivery, baby, condition or anything is worse than somebody else's.
Yeah.
Because it's the lived experience of that person. What did that baby, what impact did it have on their life?
Yeah.
And how did they feel? And the saddest part of all of this is that whatever way you go, they're always going to be the what ifs.
Yeah.
And that for me is the hardest, trying to hold a family together to say, it's okay.
Mm.
You don't need to blame yourself. This isn't about blame. This is about making the most horrendous decision that you will probably ever have to make in your life. And then be able to move forward in your life, knowing that you have made a decision.
Mm.
That is the most important message, I think, that we can ever give anyone. A lot of mothers, I think, seem to suffer with such extreme wobble in their confidence and fear of judgment as well. Yeah. I mean, this is the one thing that I'd ever say to anyone, is exactly what you just said.
Yeah. And it's important that we all support each other, because there but for the grace of God goes everybody.
Yeah.
It is so hard, and we put so much expectation on, you know, people, and, well, I wouldn't have done that, or, you know, well, why didn't you do this, or why didn't you do that?
Mm.
They don't know. They haven't been there.
Mm.
Even if they think they've been there, they haven't been there. It's not their role. They have no right. And if it upsets somebody what you say, that's their problem. It's not your problem. You just have to get up and know that in your situation, you did what you thought was the right thing at the time, and you will have to live with that. Mm. And you will meet it, unfortunately, head on throughout your life. It's going to come back, and there's going to be days when you have wobbles where you think, oh my God, should I have? Should I not have? What should I have done? And it's not going to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because I sort of see Luna is with me both as a very tiny, you know, 18 week plus gestation aged baby and as a nearly 4-year-old. She runs alongside me in both of those ways. And I think that's that bit that the grief and the what ifs and the knowing that she is missing as a living child from our family, that's the reminder, because I can picture her as a 4-year-old running along. I'm getting a bit emotional. it's usually when I see others of a similar age. But actually, even just in my mind's eye, I can just picture her like that. And I think that's what sort of catches you years along.
Yeah.
It's that's what you're missing.
I always think when Jake does something new or says a new word or he's just exploring his world, and I'm just like, oh God, like Bud would be doing exactly the same right now, and would they both look alike and would they have the same colour hair? And it is, I think, later on, once you've obviously processed the initial birth and things like that, that's the kind of thing that does hit you. But I just like to say, I think those words that you just said, Sally, are exactly why me and Hayley and I started this podcast, because someone in the middle of the night will be listening to this and someone will need to hear those words to help them continue going. So I just want to say thank you.
Yeah,
no worries. And also, just so that people out there know that if they're then embarking on a subsequent pregnancy, that they can contact their hospital in advance around the booking time, where they can say, I might like some input from the bereavement midwife. And again, that feels a bit weird because, you know, why would I? I'm now going hopefully onto a different journey. And yet, does this bereavement midwife really have a role? And, you know, isn't she a bit of bad luck, really? But actually, I can be there and actually help you on the days when things are not going quite so well, when you suddenly have a flashback to something, you know, where you're saying, I'm really struggling because this was the point at which we found out. And it could be as simple as, for instance, me organising with the sonographer that we don't take you to the same scan room that you went to on the day that you found out about your baby's condition.
Wow.
Little tiny things like that can make a huge amount of difference when it's already scary. I'm scared because I'm now pregnant again. What if the same thing's going to happen? And of course, lockdown is not helping matters, you know, this COVID, because a lot of parents are sort of really concerned. What if they tell me something really bad and my partner's not there? I mean, and we're really blessed in the hospital that I'm in because the management have made sure that actually you will be attending with your partner for a scan. You know, it's not just for those people, you know, who have experienced a previous loss, but also you were once that person who walked in a naive fashion.
Yeah.
Here we are, we're pregnant. And actually your world was shattered with a few words. And anybody could be that person.
Yeah.
But it's having somebody around who could also just help make that transition just a little bit easier. I can't change everything, and I can't guarantee anything. Unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast. Pregnancy is as pregnancy is. And these babies, you know, develop in a certain way or they don't. But knowing that you've got someone who you can just say, oh, I just had a thought, and can you help me with this? Yeah. Could you sort this out? Or would you come with me? Can make a lot of difference.
Yeah, it's such a valuable piece of information though, because I mean, I'm getting a bit emotional now. I'm thinking, God, how much different could things have been if I'd known what you've just said, if I'd known what things I could have accessed, you know. And it's so important to highlight the whole COVID issue as well, because there are a lot of people going to be suffering and will continue to suffer because of the restrictions put on.
Especially going to be stuck at home in some cases. You know, people are having gone through something like this right now. Where do they go?
Yeah.
You know, having time off after you've experienced a loss is important. But when that time off is that everybody else is stopping and you don't see people, and people become very centered on themselves all around the country because of course they're suffering this terrible thing and everything else, and you're just thinking, you have not got a clue. My baby died.
Yeah,
my hopes and dreams are not going to be fulfilled, and you're just worrying about the fact that you can't go out for a coffee, you know. Get a life.
It's true. I can remember thinking, I mean, this is obviously pre-COVID, but just remembering, you know, everybody else getting on with their lives and me going, whoa, you all need to check yourselves. My baby's died. You can't be worried about this. We're going off and doing that. And don't you all understand? My baby died. And just feeling really out of place. And I mean that in not being, I think when this happens, you feel very out of place. And I don't just mean as in you're awkward and don't fit in. I mean, you've kind of like left the world.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to say you left the real world, but actually maybe you've entered the real world and everybody else is in this fake world. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, it's a club. I mean, I often talk about people joining this exclusive club. It is the highest, you know, the cost of this club is the worst cost ever.
The membership criteria isn't the best, is it?
Yeah.
No. And people are just, you know, they're very lost. And as you say, Hayley, it's like you step out of the world for a little while, but you can still see the world around you. And it's still moving at this breakneck speed.
Yes.
And you're just like, whoa, have you no idea what's happened?
Yeah.
Do you not see this? And then people say really dumb things like, you know, when, oh my God, you know, so-and-so did this. And you're just thinking, really?
Yeah.
That's what was bothering you? Okay, well, you've got it really cool, because I'm sitting here thinking, what do I do now?
Yeah. I have to say my bullshit meter is very well-tuned now. Like I just don't really have much patience for it because of what we've been through. I mean, I try not to be hugely judgmental, obviously, but it's just what involvement I put into stuff like that, because I just go, nah, it's not really, it doesn't matter, you know. That's the sort of thing.
Like, nothing makes sense. I think I remember sitting in a car park in a supermarket, just I couldn't get out of the car. I was just watching people coming in and out, and I was like, but they're going in there to buy food. What do they need to buy food for? Like, why are they buying food when I've just lost my baby?
Yeah.
And like, why are they still continuing to eat? And it was just, like, almost one hand you can feel yourself being irrational, on the other hand you can't make sense of why.
I think that speaks to the meaninglessness. When your baby dies, when your child dies before you, this out of order death, it's not meant to happen. And how does life have any meaning? Why does anything matter anymore? My child has died.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, why would people go shopping for food? It doesn't matter. My baby has died. You know, it's, I think people who have been through it will understand what we're talking about. But I think it is that thing that life is meaningless in those very immediate, right afterwards. And you just can't understand why anybody would do going to work and buying food. And why would you bother doing any of it? It doesn't mean anything.
Difficult. I just wanted to ask you, Sally, how do you deal with your emotions when you're obviously surrounded by lots of grief from different families?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, getting attached to families is quite tricky. And not being able to fix things for people is very hard. I can't fix this. But actually, I kind of say that to myself most days. I go, I can't change what's happened, but I can try and make it be as good as it's going to be, so that at least the experience isn't totally negative.
Yeah.
And if I achieve that, then I've done my best. I can't ask myself any more than that. And sometimes people say to me, well, what should I do? I can't tell you what you should do. I can suggest to you some things that you might like to do. And I know I suggested a few things with Hayley, because there are some things that arose where she said, well, you know, I'm not happy about this. Why is this not happening? And why is this not happening? And then we just, you know, I said, well, okay, well, what about if you do this? And she was like, okay, kind of. And I think it's really important, because actually at that moment, are you able to think as you normally would, when we're all intelligent people? Yeah. But you aren't necessarily thinking, how do I work my way around this? How do I get the sort of support that I need? How do I do these other things? Because you're too in that moment. Whereas I can say, you know, some families found this really helpful, or maybe this is a good way to work with another child, or where are the, how to speak to partners, how to speak to other people, how to look at other people and go, do you know what? I don't want to listen to you. You're talking a load of rubbish. And also the reality of this, because the reality is you will lose an awful lot of people around you because they don't get it.
Well, they're afraid of it, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. They might be afraid of it. But some of them will actually walk across the street from you because they just don't know what to say. And then the other ones who go, oh, well, you're young enough, you can have another one. And, you know, and, oh, well, there was something wrong, so it doesn't really matter, does it?
It wasn't meant to be. Oh, my God, I hate that one.
Like, right, okay, so you've just written off this child completely when actually this child has so much importance for this family. And it blows my brains away sometimes when I see things, but I suppose I'm blessed in that my role means I can sit back, I can use the knowledge that I've learned over the time to be able to say to you, what about this? There are some things that I've done or helped with Hayley to think about, which I have then suggested to other people.
I'm thinking of the announcement cards, Sally. I'm not sure if you're talking about that.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I was really struggling with the fact that I didn't have acknowledgement of Luna, of having given birth to her. And with Benjamin, because I had had Benjamin previously, I had got all the cards and congratulations and gifts and things like that sent for him. And I was like, I really crave this for Luna. I need something for her. I need this acknowledgement. And you went, well, what if you asked for that? What if you sent something out, you know? And I think that evening I probably got on and designed an announcement card, and they were being posted out, and it had the desired effect. I mean, there was a couple of funny outcomes. I say funny in sort of quotation marks, but actually, you know, it had the desired effect. People responded. We got cards and little gifts, actually. And I even had one friend say to me, it's exactly what I needed. I wanted to send you something. And by getting that card from you, it let me know that it was okay to send you something. And they came flooding in, and it was a brilliant thing to do.
But it only came about purely because you were saying to me, this was my issue. And then I was just thinking, well, what did you do last time that made it so it happened? But also I did give you the caveat that, of course, it might backfire on you.
Oh, yes. You did say there is a risk here. There is a risk that it might backfire. And there were, you know, so we did. So the cards went out. We got responses from some people. Some people didn't respond. That's a fact. Some people, so what I was referring to, what was funny, some people referred, I thought we were announcing a live birth. So three people got the wrong end of the stick. One of them was, two of them were from messages, like text messages, and one of them sent a congratulations card. And actually, when the card arrived and I opened it and it says, congratulations on your new baby. And at first I was like, oh God, they've got the wrong end of the stick, which they had. And then I went, well, why shouldn't I be congratulated?
Yeah.
So it wasn't a problem. And then these two people who had sent text messages, which were congratulatory text messages, I was actually more worried about them, thinking, oh God, they've got the wrong end of the stick. They've misunderstood. I'm going to have to speak to them and they're going to be mortified. You know, I was more worried about how they would feel. Actually, for me, even getting those messages, I thought, well, it's acknowledgement. They're congratulating. Why shouldn't I be congratulated? And then the people who didn't respond at all, well, there you go. I know where I stand on this with them.
Yeah. And that's it. And it's not only having to be able to make a choice about what you do, how you can deal with the situation, but it's also having someone there saying to you, but just be aware that there might be some things that you don't like come from this. And how will you cope with that?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had people who have taken their children after a baby has died out for a walk in the park. And initially, you know, being told by that family, I thought you were totally crackers. And me saying, and how did it go?
Yeah.
And it's like, it was the best thing we could have ever done. but they wouldn't have thought about it, because in that moment of grief, is that going to be the first thing that pops into your head? I'm seeing this more and more because that's my role. Whereas you, as the person who's experiencing it, need someone to say, what about?
Yeah.
Have you thought of? And that can make the difference. And that's why, even though in a subsequent pregnancy, people might say, well, why would I want a bereavement midwife? But actually, you might have a wobble and we might need to actually look at another solution for this baby. Mm. Not because it's dying or you're going to have to look at the thought of potentially terminating, but because just getting through that scan, just getting through that appointment might be the triggers that take you back to a darker place. And so it can be beneficial. And it is, it's such an important time in any family's life. And it's a rite of passage. And we expect all rites of passage to go perfectly. Mm. And the reality is they don't. Mm. And I just wish that the systems in all hospitals were able to accommodate the needs of all of the families that we meet, because it can make such a difference. Can't change that outcome. I can't wave a magic wand, but it can make a difference to how you recover.
Yeah.
I can't also change the fact that, sadly, all of you will carry this for your lives.
Mm.
There is no turning that page back. Yeah, your babies will always be part of your lives. And that there needs to be people there who can help you, who can give you the vision. I can't walk your journey, but I can hopefully guide you along a particular route, and that might change. You might turn around and learn so much more, and you're going to learn so much more than I ever will know. But when you first hit this situation, that's when you need someone to sit there with you and help you with the rational thoughts.
Mm.
Thank you. I think those words are so important. We all need to hear them. So just before we begin wrapping up, we've got a couple of questions that we're asking everyone, and we're calling them the TFMR takeaways. So the first question is, what advice would you give to women and families either facing a TFMR or have undergone a termination? And the second one's, what hope can you offer to women who have undergone a termination?
Okay, so the first one, they allow themselves time to make any decisions, to collect the facts. I do advise people to journal, to make sure that every time they think of something else that they need to understand, they write it down, because it won't stay in your head. It'll wander around. You've got too much going on.
Yeah.
So that when you go and see your specialists, whoever you're seeing, the fetal medicine team or anything, you are able to sit with them and say, right, I need an answer to this. You know, ask for extra information if you want. Is there somewhere else I can go? Can I speak to a different organization? You know, is there someone else I can talk to? What sort of support is going to be there for me? So those are really important things, so that you are not rushed on a journey, because actually your child has got a life-limiting condition, then your child's life will be limited by that condition. And whether you opt for termination now or in 2 weeks, the condition's still there.
Mm.
Yeah. And in some cases, the child will have made its own decision. You know, it's the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
But some families, that decision will be taken out of their hands. And for some families, that's the difference for them, that they feel that there's less of a guilt thing, because I really am concerned about this guilt thing. I find so many parents, you know, I had one mum who was like, what, you know, this should be my daughter. This should be my daughter. And she never got to see her child.
Is that when you think you can offer some kind of hope?
Yeah.
In that circumstance?
Yeah, but with her, when her second child was born and she was still crying on day 10, and I can remember her saying, Sally, they're telling me I shouldn't be crying now because, you know, I've got this live baby. And I was like, I can remember speaking to the midwife concerned, and, you know, I said, so what made you think that that was all right? And she said, well, of course, you know, she's got this live baby, so she should be happy. And I went, but that doesn't change her dead baby. Her dead baby still existed. And she's now living with that. So actually what I said to her was, you cry as much as you want to, because actually you're still grieving for that other baby that you never got to meet. And why don't you tell this little person all about their big sister?
Mm.
So that she was able to have that conversation. And when you've got a newborn baby, you know, you're crying anyway most of the time. So they really don't know whether you're crying because you're sad, because you're mummy, or it's your milk, or it's whatever else. So the baby will listen. It has no idea what you're talking about. You tell it all about its big sister. And so therefore, it helps you to relive who your little girl was or your little boy was.
Yeah, I think that's really lovely. It's that including this baby, even though they have died, they are still a part of your family and they continue to be a part of your family. That's really, really a really wonderful message to end on, Sally. That's, you know, it's been so great having you on. Really appreciate all of your words of wisdom and insight. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We really hope you enjoyed today's episode, and please join us next time where we'll be talking to Susie J. Goldsmith. Susie is a photographer, a mentor, and the author of The Rallying Cry. We'll be speaking with her about creative self-care and how this can help heal the trauma of TFMR.
Thank you for listening once again. You can follow us on Instagram at TimeToTalkTFMR. You can email us at talktfmr@yahoo.com. Let us know your thoughts, your experiences, and any ideas you have for future episodes.
Goodbye, and please take gentle care of yourselves.
Bye.